We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
This is the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. As always, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. Our phone guest will join us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. Mike Golic. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. We got a lot to unpack.
We got a lot to unpack.
We think we have a baseball season.
Yes.
We'll deal with that.
Yeah.
We have our first significant player on a team that has a championship opting out of the NBA bubble for very understandable reasons.
And the most significant addition possible,
yeah,
potentially coming off of
Shirtless, potentially.
Wow.
We'll get to that. But the story that has dominated much more than just sports headlines lately continues to be forefront in everything that we're talking about. And let me be clear, first and foremost, what we came to last night was good news. The best possible scenario. The FBI has ruled that the noose, and it was a noose, that was found hanging in the garage of NASCAR driver Bubba Wallace, the lone African-American driver on the NASCAR circuit, was not part of a hate crime. It was something that had been there all the way back to October.
Right.
But it was there are pictures of it that have circulated on Twitter. You find it. It is definitely a noose that was hanging in that locker room, although it had been there since October.
Yeah, so that there are more questions certainly that come of this.
The
bottom line is the story we were talking about was wrong. That's plain and simple.
Yeah.
Right? The story was wrong that it was a hate crime toward Bubba Wallace. So that part is absolutely right. So we talked about a story that was reported to us as wrong. I look at two things out of this that are good. And one, it wasn't a hate crime against Bubba Wallace. And two, that no individual person got trampled here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Their reputation. There was no finger pointing at a certain person,
yes,
who did this.
Well, there are people pointing incorrectly at Bubba.
Well, they're not.
We'll get to that in a minute.
I mean,
that's incorrect.
There was no hate crime against Bubba, which is good. And there's nobody that everybody went after saying this is the person that did it, and then you had to say, oh no, it wasn't. So nobody's reputation got destroyed, which is a good thing. It wasn't a hate crime toward Bubba Wallace, which is a good thing. But we talked about a story that was wrong, and the FBI came in and figured that out. And now, as Trey said, NASCAR will continue to investigate. Like, there's questions. Does every rope pull look like that? Because it looked like a noose, the rope pull. To pull down a garage door, for those that may not know what we're talking about. Do all of them look like that? And it was there last October. You could see a car there, Menards, number 21, in the garage there with the rope behind it. So you know it was there before Bubba Wallace got there. So there are other questions, but, you know, it is time to say, okay, that part of the story we reported on was wrong, and now where does it go from here?
Yeah, and I guess that's my thing in the response is, you're right. I would hope in that situation, and I think past events would probably back this up, that if a specific person were accused, we would do what we always do, which is say alleged. We would say partner it with the language that allows for the truth to be found out in a situation like that and not ruin a person's life over it,
right,
which wasn't the case here. The thing that was prosecuted here was the idea or the insinuation that racism in this way was possible, which I think, given the burden of a lot of public evidence, is something that is reasonable. But you're right. In this situation, I am curious about that part of it, because this is something like all these garages in theory would have some sort of rope to pull it down. How common is this? And would a crew that works in NASCAR be this surprised by his presence if it was something that existed in every locker? I seriously doubt that in this situation.
Right. So here's where sort of things went from 0 to 100, for lack of a better term. This was the original statement from NASCAR that came out Sunday. Late this afternoon, NASCAR was made aware that a noose was found in the garage stall of the number 43 team. We are angry and outraged and cannot state strongly enough how seriously we take this heinous act. Number 43 team is Bubba Wallace's car. We have launched an immediate investigation and will do everything we can to identify the person or persons responsible and eliminate them from the sport. As we have stated unequivocally, there is no place for racism in NASCAR, and this act only strengthens our resolve to make the sport open and welcoming to all. So that was a definitive statement by NASCAR that said, we found a noose.
Right.
And the picture shows that whatever that rope pull was, it was in the shape of a noose, that they found in that garage. So when NASCAR came out that definitively saying that this was a heinous act, and we have no part of racism has no part in this sport, that was made clear by the statement from NASCAR. So that was the starting off point for everything. So how did it get to where it is now? Well, let's listen to Marty Smith on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt last night.
Wallace's car did not pass inspection. They had to come back and adjust some things. And that is when the crew member saw it, made his crew chief aware, and then it went up the line to NASCAR. And it is a noose. I asked NASCAR, I said, is this just a pull rope that is formed in a pull-down fashion, in a hoop fashion, or is it a noose? And they said, it is unequivocally a noose. And I said, okay. And they stopped me mid-sentence, and they said, Marty, the FBI dispatched 13 agents immediately the next morning to come out and look at this. And they said, even if we didn't have the current climate with banning the Confederate flag and all that's going on in America, if they saw this noose, then the FBI told NASCAR they would have investigated it anyway.
So there you have the FBI saying they would have investigated it anyway because no one is denying that it's a noose. The question then becomes, how long has it been there and what was it used for and how did it get there?
Well, there are plenty of people, if depends on where you're reading in Twitter world, yeah, that are saying it's not a noose, it's just a pull down. Again, you know, when this goes into social media world, it goes all over the place. I would like to know, if for those that are saying it's not a noose, then does it look like this in all the garages? Does every pull down look like this? Cause it does look like a noose. But then there's the question of, remember, as Marty said, this was the Bubba Wallace's crew that went back. So they had been there before and never. So now, because it was already noticed, we're going to ask the question, well, why didn't you notice it before? I have no idea of that reason, because they've been in that garage multiple times. And then the one time they went back after inspection, they noticed it that time. So I'm sure there'll be more questions asked, but we do know definitively that it was there last October. So again, the good news, it wasn't directed at Bubba Wallace.
And I think that's the point in all of this is, and Bubba Wallace was on CNN last night talking about all this. And mentioned a number of things, one of which was, it was Steve Phillips who told Bubba about this. Bubba never saw the news. Right, Bubba was not the one that reported the presence of this to anyone. He had it told to him by a very emotional president of NASCAR in all of this and responded in kind like that. So calling Bubba Jussie Smollett and all that stuff.
It's
dumb and wrong in that situation. And I guess I would look at this and I would say, all right, in the response, Dad, you mentioned there was no one who was a direct target of all of this other than the idea of racism. And so people insinuating that what the drivers did made them look bad or anything. What did the drivers do other than support a member of their team? And when we talked about this the other day, part of our job is to respond given our unique perspectives. And as you always said, Dad, take people where they can't go. The way I responded was the way I said I would have responded in the locker room, which is if I thought one of my teammates is under attack, I would rally and defend that teammate. And in this situation, NASCAR's drivers rallied in support and defense of their teammate. They made sure that he felt loved and supported because for a lot of these guys, as we saw, they know him very well. For some of these guys, he's a very good friend in all of this. And so I look at that and I say, all right, the response from NASCAR is something that should be good. Everyone stood and denounced racism the way that the entire country and world really has lately, which I feel like is still all something we can get behind in that idea. And they made a driver who is the only African-American driver in the sport, who has, I'm sure, dealt with some instances of racism, or at the very least feeling very alone, feel like he was loved and supported. So I struggle to see where anyone in that situation from the driver's side or Bubba look bad.
I completely agree. Listen, the story was wrong. We talked about a wrong story. The reaction of the drivers was fantastic. Yeah. You're exactly right. Our job is to analyze things. We're not journalists. We're not reporters. The stories come to us, and we give our opinions and talk about them through our experiences.
And we do our best to be informed, and we do our best to make sure we're looking for information.
Exactly right. You know, we have people we trust in getting information that we go with. But part of our background is in locker rooms, and the reaction of the drivers was fantastic.
It was as good as it could be.
Without question, thinking what went on, and as it turns out again, it didn't, but still thinking that, and the support they showed was fantastic.
And let's be clear and put in context everything else that was going on that Sunday. There was a plane that flew over Talladega with a Stars and Bars flag that said defund NASCAR, and just outside the property of Talladega, there was a parade of people with the Confederate flag. So paint that, take all of that into context with what NASCAR was presented with, and whether it, obviously they hit the accelerator a little too fast, but you can understand the heightened sensitivity that they were in.
And we'll get to some of NASCAR's response and what this could have and should be like going forward. But I think, again, it's important with the drivers to say in this situation, they did not look at someone else and besmirch their character and walk them
they
through
just
all
backed
this.
Their guy.
NASCAR backed their guy against the idea of racism.
And that's not a bad thing.
And I think given the opportunity to do that again, NASCAR's drivers and the friends of Bubba Wallace would back their friend and make sure he feels supported against the idea of racism 10 out of 10 times.
Golic
and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr. We're delighted to be joined now by Ryan McGee, ESPN senior NASCAR writer and the host of Marty McGee Podcast. Ryan, thanks for being with us. We appreciate your time. Obviously, I just want to say, from a personal standpoint, I've just enjoyed so much your insights and the things you've shared about what NASCAR is and what it isn't and what it's meant to you and the perspective you brought to it over the last couple of weeks. Just before we get into anything else, I just wanted you to know I really appreciated your authentic voice on all of this and the things that NASCAR has been trying to change over the last 10 days or so.
Well, that means an awful lot, especially coming from you. And now it puts a lot of pressure on me to make sure that I say the right things over the next few minutes.
Well, let's just start with letting you tell us and everybody what your thoughts were when the FBI said, hey, this rope had been here since last October. It's not a hate crime against Bubba Wallace. So what were your thoughts?
Well, I mean, the initial response was just relief. Because the most difficult part of all this for me, having been around the sport for 25 years and having friends and literally on every single team in that garage, and knowing the security guys at Talladega Super Speedway and knowing the staff at Talladega and knowing the executive people at NASCAR, I was having a really difficult time trying to wrap my brain around someone within that group having done this. And so that was my initial reaction, was just relief. And then my second reaction was, I think, a reaction that most people have, which is, well, what in the world, you know, did everything we saw on Monday, which was the most moving moment I've seen in a quarter century covering this sport, you know, did that take away from this? And did this, with this news, now slap a forever asterisk on what we saw on Monday. And so those was my initial reaction. But the primary part, and I think this is the part that gets lost with a lot of people in the sensationalism part of it, is it's relief. I mean, there was no hate crime. And that part of it is, that's the most important part. I don't know if it's what everyone's focusing on today.
No, you're right, and there's a million different directions we need to go with this, but most importantly, because we're getting a lot of this, Ryan, from people saying, well, that's just a garage pull that is in a lot of garages. And look, we're not in the pits a lot of times, and NASCAR and the FBI have said definitively, no, this was a noose. So I guess as someone who's been around the sport as long as you have and has the expertise in it, is this the sort of thing you would see in a lot of garages?
you wouldn't see a noose. You'd see that rope. You'd see that pull down rope in every garage. And yeah, that's the part I feel like I'm kind of screaming. I'm working on a piece for ESPN.com for later today, and that's the part I'm trying to reiterate, which is, you know, the FBI used the word noose four times in a very short statement yesterday. And so NASCAR has continued to say noose. Bubba Wallace has continued to say noose. No one has denied that. And so, if, you know, I've seen a picture of it that was shown to me by NASCAR. It's a noose. I mean, there's our former coworker, Bob Pockers, who's at Fox Sports now, he posted a picture on his phone from October of last year, and you could see it hanging there. And the FBI looked at every single one of those pull-down ropes in the Talladega Super Speedway garage, and the only one that was tied in this configuration was the one in garage number four. And so the fact that it was a noose is indisputable. And also the, you know, the tinfoil hat of conspiracy theory folks who all want to say that, you know, Bubba was in on this and Richard Petty was in on this. And no, there's no way that could possibly have happened, because there's no way they could have predicted where they would be in the point standings, which determines what garage stall they would have been in. There's no, particularly with the pandemic restrictions, the teams are much smaller. They're more spread out for social distancing. So there was no way for anyone to have known that the 43 car would have been in garage stall number four this weekend.
Talking to Ryan McGee with us here on Golic and Wingo. Ryan, Marty went on Scott Van Pelt last night and said that if NASCAR had to do it all over again, they probably would have issued a different statement initially. What do you think could have been done differently, if anything should have been, going through this process from NASCAR all the way through?
Yeah, and Marty and I, as you guys can imagine, we were talking about this, you know, even before the FBI's statement came out. We were talking about this until about 2 o'clock in the morning last night. We'll be talking about it all day today. And so I think that the wording was so strong in NASCAR's statement on Sunday night. And I give them a pass on that, quite frankly, because think about the context of that day. You know, you're the NASCAR executives. You already know this fight's coming. You know, when I talked to Steve Phelps the night that they announced the Confederate flag ban, what he said to me was, he said, we all know hell's coming. We know it is. But they were ready for that fight. And so that Sunday at Talladega, and your race was just rained out, and the day started with a Confederate flag and a defund NASCAR banner flown behind an airplane over the track. During that day, a convoy of pickup trucks with Confederate flags were riding around the perimeter of the racetrack. Every news channel, this is the footage that they were showing. Your race gets rained out. And as you're settling in for, well, at least maybe we can get something to eat, someone walks up to you and says, hey, by the way, there's a noose hanging in garage stall number four. And so I think that's where the passion and the message that was trying to be sent in that release. Looking back, maybe they could have backed that up just a little bit with the intensity, because we all ran with that. The drivers ran with that. That is what the drivers used. That was the impetus for them. And NASCAR had nothing to do with the pushing of Bubba Wallace's car out to the grid and the dramatic, you know, following of that car by every crew and the circling of that car by every driver. That was started with the drivers, because they were so angry over what was found in the garage, and when they found out about that on Sunday night and on Monday morning. So, yeah, maybe back the language up a little bit, but within the context of that day and within the context of what the nation has been enduring over the last month, and NASCAR finding itself on the tip of that spear in this conversation of social change, I get why the wording in that release was so strong.
Ryan, one of the other things, and again, we are not racing NASCAR people, so we don't know how much the track is used, the garages are used, but if we say a rope looking like that is a pull-down, that's not the norm there of what other ropes look like in other garages, why did it take so long for that to actually get noticed if it was been like that since last October?
Yeah, well, and keep in mind that, you know, that garage stall had been used by other teams in other series. I mean, they've been running races there all weekend. And the team itself, the 43 team, had been in and out of that garage stall a couple of times just that very day. It was when they had returned from another tech inspection. So just so you guys know, cars go through tech inspection multiple times. You know, they're rolled in and out for practice. They're rolled in and out for qualifying. They're rolled in and out for tech inspection. And in this case, they had already, that car had been in and out of that garage a couple of times before even anyone on the team had noticed it. So it's just kind of a background thing. You know, it's not like it was not like it was hanging from the center of the door in some dramatic Hollywood fashion that everyone would have seen it. You know, it was over there on the side, a rope that already existed that was, for whatever reason, fashioned into a noose. And so, you know, it's just like if you're going to practice, you might not notice that blocking sled that's sitting over there 7 straight days. But then the one day you do, you're like, oh, that blocking sled's been sitting there. It's just kind of, the garage is a busy place with a lot of stuff going on and a lot of gear, and they just didn't notice it.
So, Ryan, looking at this now, we've seen Steve Phelps has already come out and talked about this. Saw Bubba Wallace is on CNN last night addressing this, talking about his perspective on it. What does NASCAR now prepare for going forward in all this? You mentioned that Steve Phelps said after the Confederate flag removal that they knew they had hell coming. What is NASCAR prepared for now in response to this?
Well, I think they are prepared to continue with they are so passionate and so adamant about this and about making sure that, you know, what NASCAR is, the perception of what NASCAR is changed. And they have been frustrated by that for a long time. You know, we learned this with Kyle Larson, you know, when he used the N-word playing an online game on television, you know, just a couple months ago, which seems like 15 years ago at this point. Yeah. But you saw how everyone in the sport circled the wagons and Kyle Larson disappeared. Because this is not the sport that it was in 1965. And people, NASCAR fights every day to change that perception. That's not going to change. This just makes it a little more complicated because now the crazies have arrived. You know, now if you go on Twitter at all, there's a whole other level of, you know, people making fun of Bubba Wallace and comparing him to the guy from Empire. And people trying to frame this up as, you know, something that was faked. And so now, you know, the challenge for NASCAR is going to be to keep their eye on the ball when it comes to, you know, racial diversity and racial equality and supporting Bubba Wallace and everything that means. There's just kind of a whole other layer of crazy involved in it that that they weren't counting on.
And to that point, Ryan, we saw that support Monday. And again, it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Any sporting event, forget NASCAR, in any sporting event I've ever watched, that support is going to be needed more than ever for Bubba going forward, because you're right, there are going to people going to make the incorrect conclusion that he had something to do with it, therefore this whole thing is bogus, hashtag fake news, which is not true. So right. We've had Bubba on the show, and he was great. Give us a little insight into this guy and what makes him the person that he is, who had the guts to say, hey, man, we need to get rid of that flag. And NASCAR said, you know what? We've talked about it before, and we tried a soft stance on this before, but you're right. We're drawing that line in the sand. Give us some insight who this kid is.
Well, and, you know, I keep steering people back toward a story that I wrote for ESPN the magazine 2.5 years ago, and it was on the eve of his Daytona 500 debut when he had signed to drive Richard Petty's number 43 car back in 2018. And, you know, I've covered Bubba since he was racing late models, which is like double A baseball. And I covered Bubba when he won in the truck series and when he was racing in the Xfinity series and when he drove for some big teams and finally landed with Richard Petty Motorsports because it would get him to the top level of NASCAR. And he shared with me 2.5 years ago the life that he's had to lead that, unfortunately, you know, every person of color in the United States, it feels like, has had to lead, which is when he was 9 years old, he had a cousin shot and killed by police in Knoxville, Tennessee, that led to multiple court cases, and it was a very controversial shooting. He was pulled over shortly after signing his first big NASCAR contract because he bought a new tricked-out Jeep, and he was pulled over in Virginia for a failure to give a turn signal while changing lanes, and by the time the stop was over with, it was half a dozen police cruisers and canine units crawling all throughout his Jeep because they didn't think that someone like him should be driving a $50,000 tricked out Jeep. And so he shared those things with me, and I spent time with his mother, who was at the very front line of the protest when it came to the killing of Bubba's cousin, her nephew. And so he never shared those things publicly before because he didn't think that what he didn't want is he didn't want people to think he had gotten to the NASCAR Cup Series because he was black. And drivers are very sensitive about what got you to the top level. They don't want anyone to think they were there because of any sort of advantage, be it money, be it bloodline, you know, be it because you came from the Drive for Diversity program. And he said to me then, once I've matured enough and I feel like I have the platform and I feel like I have the voice, I absolutely want to make people understand that this sport is awesome, no matter what the color of your skin, no matter what your background is. And now that moment has arrived. And that's who Bubba Wallace is. When I interviewed him, he was 20-something years old. When I first met him, he was 16. And now he's in his mid-20s. And he has matured into this moment at the right time. And I can tell you this, and you guys know because you talked to him, he will not be backing down anytime soon.
No. Listen, that's a very interesting background, and we look forward to seeing what happens when they head to Pocono this week. Ryan, again, we appreciate your time, but most importantly, we really appreciate your perspective on this, and we look forward to many more conversations going forward. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you, guys.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night, yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
It's back, baby. It's back. Until maybe it isn't. Glad
Stop.
You're with us. Golic and
Why
Wingo.
Aren't you saying that what about any other sport?
It is for every sport. It's
no,
all
you don't.
You
do not say that about the other sports. You're only saying it for baseball. They've agreed
because
to a deal.
Because baseball.
They agreed to a
they
deal.
They did this to themselves. Trade. They dragged us through the muck and the mire. And now we're supposed to say, oh, joy, joy, happy, happy.
No, I did, but they're going to play. You keep making it sound like they're not going to play. They're going to do what every other league
Man,
did.
Man, Keith Olbermann is lording over me right now, and his words are weighing heavily upon my shoulders.
He said no World Series.
He said 50% chance they get out of the gate.
Listen, if you want to let Keith Olbermann dunk on you, that's your decision.
That's your
but I'm going to be
Keith Olbermann's
right
been dunking on
poster.
Me since the first time I watched him in, what, 1993.
Yeah. Okay.
So
that's your choice, man. I'm throwing elbows and rib cages. Yep, you're not going to dunk on me without coming back down coughing blood.
Keith, you're feel free to dunk on me whenever you want, because your words have merit, my friend. Glad you're with us. Happy, happy times. Skolik and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests, including our next guest, join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. So let's just stop me talking being pessimistic.
Yes.
Maybe he's much more optimistic. Let's bring in our fine baseball analyst, Doug Glanville, of course, longtime player in Major League Baseball, and just an all-around erudite great guy. Doug, thanks for being with us this morning. Are you happy? Are you cautiously optimistic? Are you waiting for the rug to be pulled out? Where are you?
You hit them all right there. It's a triple. Look, I'm happy. I love baseball. I've played it my entire life, and, of course, covering it hasn't even changed that. So it's great to see that opportunity opening up. Of course, I'm cautious because as a player, I remember those concerns. I mean, even something as serious as 9/11, the uncertainty remains. And we know that with Florida and other states having these increased cases and the Phillies shutting down, and there's a lot of things that we're going to face coming into spring training that just that close proximity is going to create some issues. And I doubt they're going to get through a full spring training without someone getting testing positive. It just seems inevitable. You have players from all over the world coming together, different states who have different rules. It's just going to be very tough to keep everybody on protocol, but I'm hoping for the best.
And that's the pandemic side of it. Then there's the these guys haven't been together in a while side of it. How much do you expect those soft tissue injuries to happen a little more frequently?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's difficult to stay in shape when you're used to this rhythm of having an off-season training, then starting up, and then all of a sudden, in this case, just pulling back. And, pitching is going to be a big question mark because, more and more with the advent of, looking at the bullpen usage and how there's so many different arms that come into a game, you know, you're not going to be able to go, you know, nine innings right out of the gate. It's going to be a lot of different players, and how that's going to look and play out from an injury standpoint is hugely uncertain. So what's exciting, and I heard it in your sort of intro, is the innovation. You know, what could possibly happen? You could try all kinds of things now to spice the game up and give fan access. There's so much there that you can turn what is now a sprint instead of the marathon we used to always talk about into something very innovative and very exciting.
Doug, I'm curious in that regard. One of the things that is happening that is a change at the major league level is going to be during the regular season, not during the postseason, the addition of, once you get to extra innings, the batter beginning on second base for the start of extras. We've heard a lot of reaction to that, but as someone who played the game, what do you make of that as one of the changes and potential innovations?
I feel nauseous about that one, actually. I have a friend, I'm going to give him a shout-out, Wes Alexander, who I said, well, we got to come up with a score. How do you score that? A guy just showed up at second base, and he came up with the term magic double. So, you know, I can't explain that, how you have a person there and just show up. I mean, someone like Jacob DeGrom, who's always snake bit, great pitcher, he's the perfect candidate to throw a no-hitter perfect game and then lose on a magic double scoring in the extra inning. So that one I'm not a fan of. That one I got to throw out.
Magic double, by the way, sounds like it needs to be a fast food item. Very soon.
I'll take the magic double. But by the way,
if that runner scores, that doesn't go against the pitcher, just so we know.
But you do understand why they're doing it, right? Because the last thing we can have in this expedited sprint to a postseason is to have these long games really muck up the schedule as it's going to be presented. Do you understand at least that part of it?
Yeah, I mean, I understand that they've been considered this even before this, right? The idea of, you know, you're already into bullpenning, and when you're getting farther away from an era where pitchers would go eight innings and nine innings, you're so far removed because of the specialization of the bullpen that it's already set up that you're using all these arms. And so as you get into these long, protracted extra innings and you need your bullpen the next day in a three-game series, that analytics component is actually what started this conversation. So it's becoming a little bit more essential for them to reconsider. But to me, you're getting away from an aspect of the game that you could reinvent in some ways. You probably can't do this year of nine innings, but maybe there are rules that they were considering. Remember the three-batter rule? They were working towards getting away from having a pitcher every three outs, every two outs, and getting more into, all right, you need to be able to get lefties and righties out. You need to be more situational.
So Doug Glanville joining us here on Golic and Wingo. And again, I get it, taken away from baseball, because what you're going to see is sack bunt, get the guy to third, sack fly, maybe the game's going to be over. That's kind of the way a lot of people are going to want to do that. So we'll see on that. Here's another thing about it. Because it's 60 games, Doug, the way the schedule is going to play out, you play your division foes, your four division foes 10 times for 40 games, and then the closest geographical division in the other league, you play those five teams four times for the other 20 games. So that's nine teams you're playing in the 60 game. So you're seeing a lot of the same people over and over again. Advantage pitchers or hitters?
Well, I certainly think longer term, as that goes out, it advantage hitters. I mean, I used to love facing the same pitchers over and over again, and I don't know, we did it like 19 times in over a long season, and so what's exciting about that is the rivalry. You know, you bring in, you know, or you're playing this, it's geographic, you know, it's an exciting moment to think about, okay, you're winning the entire East here. You know, it's like the whole entire East is yours, and that, you know, that's very interesting, because every single game is going to have significance. You know, every game is a divisional game where you're going to gain ground or lose ground, and it's so that I like the sprint component. We had Dusty Baker on our podcast, and he talked about, well, first we asked him, well, will this World Series count? He's like, absolutely. You know, so, but on the other side of it, you have to train differently. You have to think differently. You can't be, oh, well, you know, all right, we'll worry about that the next time around in game 130 in September. Now they're thinking right from jump that every game is all hands on deck.
With that in mind, talking to Doug Glanville, the Yankees and the Dodgers have been established as co-favorites to win the World Series. Is there one team that you think, as it's constructed based on the lineup or the pitching that they have, that is best suited to find a way to get through this thing quickly?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think that, you know, I like some of those teams from the NL East and how they're set up. I mean, the Nationals, you can't count them out, although they've lost some players like Rendon. You know, they just find ways when you have certain arms to be able to push the envelope. I see teams that can have some pitching depth that won't have to go three innings out of the start and can go deeper in games to just set up the situation on the back end. You know, if you can find a way to get to that eight-inning, nine-inning setup where you're saving arms, that's going to be a huge advantage because so many teams are going to mix and match and, okay, they got to switch this guy up. We're going to start the closer this day. And, you know, so, for example, the Tampa Bay Rays, they have a shot of doing something interesting because they've gotten out of the gate fairly well, and they also have this ability to mix and match very well from an analytics standpoint. So that's going to be a great battle. And philosophically, who can pivot to this new structure the best? And they get out of the gate quickly, they're not going to stop.
Doug, speaking of new structures and new way of doing things and all this, one of the things that we've seen outlined in the health and safety protocols that were approved yesterday was this emphasis on no spitting, no licking as players are going through in all of these different scenarios, the health and safety portions of it. We talked about this. As a player, which would be more difficult, the idea of not being able to lick your fingers and potentially get some tack for the ball in those situations, or not being able to spit in a sport that seems largely defined by it in certain parts?
Let me tell you, that all that is going to fail miserably. So I just hope it doesn't lead to something. But, I mean, these are habits. They just reflexes, you know, oral fixation, whatever the heck it is. Like, and first of all, you're in the dirt all the time also. So I just don't see how that's possible. I mean, Dusty Baker, for example, it's just what he does, and he's been doing it since 1972 or whatever. So I don't see how they're going to stop the reflex of the habits. Of, you know, I used to have seeds in my mouth to, you know, I just had jaw full of seeds. And, you know, all that's going to be out. So some of that's great. Get rid of tobacco and all that. Whatever. I know that's pretty much gone, but the spitting. There's no way every player is going to be able to stop that. And the camera is going to be on them, by the way, when someone sneezes in the dugout. It's just, and so they're going to have to figure out how not to panic and all that, but the scrutiny is going to be deep.
Yeah. Doug Glanville with us, baseball analyst, and also just a vast resource on a lot of things. People, we've talked about this before on the show. Doug Glanville was once questioned by a peace officer for SSWB, shoveling snow while black. So we wanted to ask you about the situation that has gone on at NASCAR in Talladega with Bubba Wallace and the reaction that has come out of it. What do you take about what NASCAR is trying to do and the reaction to what the thing in the garage was or wasn't and how it will be perceived?
Yeah, I mean, NASCAR has been, you know, trying to take a proactive approach, and that's something that's important. You know, we have to recognize that, you know, you mentioned in my case, there's all these scenarios that have ambiguity to them when it involves race in America. And when you recognize that it doesn't have to be something, you know, giant billboard of a neon sign, there's, you know, trying to buy a house in a neighborhood. There's, you know, trying to, you know, have your kids off of a wait list, whatever it may be. There's all these subtle ways that come into play. And I think the notion that things could be dismissed holistically, right? Okay, this is racism is hinging, the existence of it is hinging on Bubba Wallace or whichever way it goes. You know, that I think that's sometimes what gets so hurtful that you can dismiss, you know, a whole experience that you have. That's clear. And, you know, since I was born, just experience I had someone, you know, call me the N-word walking home from school in elementary school. Literally, I was like, you know, eight, you know, and pull a switchblade and all this stuff. You know, so, you know, these experiences are real. And so the conversation, I think NASCAR is still trying to make sure that they address it. It should not change one way or the other. And look, it's also important to be patient in this process. It's, you know, it's easy to be, you know, especially the Twitterverse, you go back, oh yeah, no, no, you know, and we just don't know enough a lot of times to be able to cancel or go this way. We miss a lot of lessons. We miss a lot of lessons when we're so quick, in many different directions of when we're trying to figure out experiences. So I hope we listen more and be more patient. But NASCAR deserves a lot of credit to just, you know, raising the conversation and making bold moves And that's important. It's what it's going to take. And it takes a lot of courage because there's always going to be vicious backlash no matter how right you are.
Yeah, this is the beginning of the fight, no question. Doug, as always, we appreciate your time. And I'm cautiously optimistic, I guess, with you about baseball. We'll see how it all plays out. Thanks for being with us this morning.
All right, guys. Always a pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks, Doug.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold. It's very interesting where that went.
All right, Golic and Wingo here with you. Yes, Mike.
So
Golic
really Jr. quick, I know it's football music, but we talked about baseball and the man on second in the extra innings, what we could do to maybe spruce that up because baseball people don't like it. People have been great with this. They said every inning, extra inning that goes, you take a position player off the field.
I do like that. I'm not going to lie to you.
And as far as the man on second, because we said you'll just sacrifice him over to third and then get the sack fly to score him, is do it with one out. Put him on second, give him one out. That way it'll take off the sacrifice because that would be two outs, man on third, and wouldn't make a difference for the sack.
Doesn't have
fly.
A cool name, Field is Lava.
Yeah, I know.
Field is Lava.
Field is Lava.
You need,
I know.
Remind people. Those are great ideas.
Yeah.
Well thought out. Add a cool name or else I'm not going to entertain.
Got to have a cool name. I'm with you on the cool name. I like the magic double going on right now or the incredible list we're about to get.
Yeah. So, you know, we do this thing every Wednesday where I rank stuff in the NFL. And we came up with the idea this week of the teams that are all in for the Super Bowl. And but let's be clear.
I was going to say, doesn't every team want to win the Super Bowl?
Super Bowl or bust?
No, I would say some teams understand they have no chance.
Outside of Jacksonville?
Yeah. So the point is not that this is not the list of teams that I think have the best chance to win the Super Bowl.
Okay.
This, to me, is the list of teams that, through their actions this offseason, has said, we're all in this year, and we either win this thing or the season will be a failure.
Yes, we're winning the Super Bowl is the only metric of success for the following teams.
Okay, all right, okay.
All right, so with that, I've come up with, you know, a few teams. Cliff, let's do it.
Number three.
Get used to that number, by the way.
Oh, no. At number 3C.
Oh, God.
Your Indianapolis Colts. They got Philip Rivers.
Oh, yeah.
Contract. It's for 1 year.
Old quarterback.
Potentially two, but he says he wants to do. It's a 1 year deal. They gave him a wide receiver and a running back in Jonathan Taylor and Michael Pittman. They have a pretty good defense. They have a great offensive line.
They get DeForest Buckner.
They got DeForest Buckner, from the San Francisco 49ers. They are all in for this year. All in.
They are. And listen, if Philip Rivers is a quarterback coming off a season where he threw a lot of interceptions were it not for Jameis Winston. So I absolutely agree. There's a lot invested in this season that's going to have to be analyzed if it goes poorly.
Okay.
And we know in the top end what's expected.
You guys good with that one?
Yeah. Good with that.
All right, Cliff, let's move on.
Number three on the list, stay with me.
God.
Number 3B. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You're telling me that Tampa Bay isn't all in for the Super Bowl? I'm out of here. The Buccaneers. They get Tom Brady. He's got 2,000-yard wide receivers. Rob Gronkowski comes out of retirement. They had a very good defense last year where Jameis Winston, with all the turnovers, put them into a very, very difficult situation.
I'm surprised they're this low.
I was going to say, I'm very interested to see what the rest of this. Let's get to the rest of the list because I want to see where they fall because this feels low.
Real quickly, Tom Brady's the oldest quarterback to win a playoff game at 41. He'll be 43 this year. Here we go.
Another one.
Hell no.
What the hell?
Number three.
At 3A, your defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. And you may say to yourself, wait a minute. You've got the best quarterback in the game. Why are they all in to win the Super Bowl? Because that best quarterback in the game is still on a rookie contract. And you know that payday is coming, and it's coming quickly. And when it comes, the Kansas City Chiefs, as we know it, will be vastly different, which is one of the reasons why they've got Chris Jones on the franchise tag this year. I think they want to try and maximize the window with the roster they have right now to get in there and win another Super Bowl.
See, I think this is less it's Super Bowl or bust and more because they've had their quarterback win the MVP last year, won the Super Bowl last year. They are rightly only judged by this as the metric for them. Of course, right now with how talented your team is, the only expectation Super Bowl.
I'm less excited about that one.
Well, see,
you've been
at Patrick Mahomes haters since day one.
I have not. I understand your reasoning, though. Yeah. It's kind of like the Seattle when Russell Wilson was still on his rookie deal.
Correct. All right, now we move on.
Number three.
We move on to number three again. And that would be your San Francisco 49ers. I love what they did in the offseason getting Trent Williams. They get rid of Forrest Buckner. They get Javon Kinlaw, who is going to be rotated in with that great deep offensive line, defensive line. And you know they're going to pound the rock. Now, the Deebo Samuel injury is troubling for them. He's going to miss some time with the foot injury. But I still think this team, which had a 10-point lead on Kansas City in the fourth quarter, like every team had a 10-point lead on Kansas City in the postseason, were that close. And I think they're all in for this season.
I'm going to say it's your list, and you can make any list that you want, how you want it. But I would have done this list without having the two Super Bowl teams in it from last year because, of course, that is their only way to go.
But that's the whole point. The whole point is that's the whole point is Super Bowl or bust.
I would have thrown them out because I think that's
who's number
just me.
Who's number two?
What's
number two?
Veteran team, veteran coach, added a veteran player at a position they needed it, and have had so much heartbreak over the last few years. That would be your New Orleans Saints. And Emmanuel Sanders there. Listen, there is no other acceptable thing. They found ways to lose games in ridiculous ways over the last three seasons and had, I think, the best record over the last three seasons and have come up just short.
I agree with that. I think they've been in this mode for a couple of years now.
Makes perfect sense. Yeah, this is one, especially another aging quarterback, been knocking on the door, been the favorite in a lot of people's minds for the last few years, no question.
All right, and now we get to number one.
Number one.
And it's the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys, through reverse engineering, not by design, but by plan, have found a way to back themselves into a really good situation with getting Diggs after taking CeeDee Lamb in the first round. They signed everybody else, and they finally got Dak Prescott locked down. I get it. They haven't won a Super Bowl in a quarter of a century. Haven't won a championship game, a conference championship game in a quarter of a century. But with this team as it's presently constructed, I think they're all in for the ring.
They're definitely all in. The debate is around number one here, but it's interesting. And I think you're right because I think this is the only way the Cowboys come out of this in the winning side of the Dak Cowboys debate.
Yeah. Yeah, with all the money they're spending, you're going to have to show that trophy, I think. You could flip one and two, but I get the argument. It's tough for me to fight the argument.
They were first in total yards offensively last year, third in points per game, and Dak was 1 yard shy of passing Tony Romo's record for most passing yards by a Cowboy. And now he's got Amari Cooper re-signed. They have Michael Gallup there, and they get CeeDee Lamb. We think the offensive line is not what it was. The biggest concern for them is the secondary, but again, they're counting on that pick by Diggs to fortify the loss of Byron Jones.
I guess the only thing I'd say about the list is because I think San Francisco and KC are so obvious, I would have put them at B and C.
Right. But that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
All right. So let's break. I'll give you my biggest gripe with this list.
Oh boy.
Why you're absolutely right about the Cowboys and some other expectations for the teams below this tier in the NFL.
Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your baby to let you sleep in?
Yay!
What?
Yay!
We could sleep in another half hour?
Yay!
Thanks, sweetheart.
Yay!
Never. And you'll change yourself, too?
Yay!
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
We're delighted to be joined by Stephen A. Smith, host of First Take. You see on ESPN every day. Stephen A., good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, guys. How you guys doing? Hope you and your families are well.
Thank you. Same to you. And listen, we know we've got a lot of news in the world of sports, but we wanted to start with the NBA with you. We know everything's been agreed upon now. Everyone's getting ready to come back, and we started to see some positive tests. Nikola Jokic among them, testing positive for COVID-19. Avery Bradley making the decision to not play because of a potential issue with a family member being able to go. Have you been surprised by any of the news that we've gotten surrounding the NBA's return so far?
No. Not at all. It's predictable that, you know, a player or a few players are going to test positive for the coronavirus, particularly considering the global iconic brand that the NBA has become. And as a result, you have players from all over the world. You know that inevitably something like that is going to happen, as it has in other sports like tennis with Djokovic and those guys. So we understand that. In the case of Avery Bradley, he's got a six-year-old son that has had respiratory illnesses in the past that was difficult for him to recover from. You certainly understand his focus and where his attention lies, and anybody who makes the decision not to play because of the coronavirus, the pandemic, and how that could potentially jeopardize them. Everybody understands that. You get it. You prepare for that. You move forward. The only thing that took me aback was when you had players talking about not playing because they didn't want to take any focus away from the movement. And my attitude is you can do both. The platform that the NBA affords you, combined with the support of organizations of great, great coaches like Doc Rivers and Greg Popovich and Steve Kerr and those guys, to the commissioner, Adam Silver, who's himself, who has never prohibited or tried to inhibit a guy's willingness and ability to express himself. I think that the support of the NBA, the brand that it is, the manner in which they've conducted themselves, particularly under the stewardship of Adam Silver, there is no reason on earth for any player to say, well, I don't want to play because I want to focus on these protests and the things that have been taking place in this country. There is nothing stopping you from doing both. And that's the only thing that, threw me aback to some degree. Folks who were of that opinion, but nothing else.
All right, Stephen A. with us this morning. So let's focus on the playing aspect of you, because it's going to be so restrictive and it's going to be a difficult situation. How optimistic are you that this is going to go off without a hitch?
Well, I got to admit to you, I was very, very optimistic weeks ago, even up until last week. But the more you see the news of these spikes out, there's been spikes in about 23 different states. And you've heard ad nauseum about how the governor of Florida has opened the state a little bit too soon, how they've been a bit lax in terms of, you know, imploring folks to engage in social distancing and to wear their mask and gloves and things of that nature. The safety protocols that should have been put in place, there's been questions as to whether or not that has been handled effectively. A matter of fact, there really hasn't been too many questions. People have decried how ineffective they have been in the state of Florida for the most part. So that takes me aback to some degree, because I'm saying, excuse me, if something like that continues to happen, obviously, Disney World is Disney World. The NBA has already reached an agreement with Walt Disney. We understand all of that. But I went on First Take the other day and I said, you know something? Why not New York? Now, I understand it's late notice and people are averse to that kind of thinking. But what I would remind people is that New York was the epicenter of the coronavirus pandemic in this country at one point. And it is now reopened. It's in phase two. Governor Andrew Cuomo has been praised for doing an absolutely sensational job with all of this. He has clearly flattened the curve and done even better than that. And so when you look at it from that perspective and you combine that with the hotels that are available, the restaurants reopening, at least outdoors, the fact that you wouldn't feel as congested and as strapped as you would in other places, potentially in Florida or what's been going on there. To me, that is an option that should be explored. That's just my opinion. I'm in a strong minority because at this late of notice, people are saying there's no way in hell that could work. But my mentality is that there should always be a plan B. I was saying this on First Take the other day, and in the midst of saying that, I got a text message from one of the league owners who said, there is no plan B, Stephen A. It's Florida or nothing.
I have a feeling for a lot of these sports coming back, it's where they're going to do it or what their plan is or nothing. So we'll have to wait and see. Along these lines, Stephen, I go back to the days when you were on the court and preparing to play on the court. My biggest worry, and I wonder where your concern is, where these players haven't been with each other. They're going to come back and play in a shortened season. My worry is that quad, is that hamstring, is that calf, is that soft tissue injury happening more, and oh, by the way, how that can keep you out for a few weeks, which could be half of the rest of the season now.
Well, first of all, a couple of things. Number one, let me make sure to show nothing but the utmost respect to my colleagues from the Jalen Rose, the Jay Williams of the world, and various others, to even people like yourself, Golic. Don't compare me to y'all. Y'all played. I tried to play. That's number one. Let's get that out the way. Okay, number two, I would say this to you. Certainly those are things to be concerned about, but that's the part about all of this I love. Because as a guy that has covered the sport for a quarter century now, I have always tried to remind people, like when I raved about Michael Jordan and the Kobe Bryants of the world and the LeBron James of today and stuff like that, I've never stopped at just their heroics on the court. I have always applauded and revered their level of preparation that they were willing to put into the game to make sure that they elevated their level of greatness at every single opportunity. And so when you're looking at something like this going on right now in the world where we've got COVID-19 pandemic taking place and the game has been stripped from us for the last 3+ months, et cetera, what I love about the idea of the NBA coming back is we're going to find out who the true professionals are. What were you doing to take care of yourself while you were not playing? That comes with it. It's not just about stepping on the court and dunking or shooting threes or handling a basketball, rebounding, defending, or whatever. What kind of shape are you in? How focused and attentive were you towards being in peak condition? So upon your return, there is no doubt about your greatness and the professionalism that you attach to that greatness. All of that comes in line. You are a professional athlete. You know exactly what I'm talking about here. You didn't just show up on the field come training camp. You didn't just show up in preseason or the postseason. It was a year-round job in order for you to be an NFL player. It was a year-round job in order for all of those athletes who have ultimately worked for ESPN and beyond to be ready to ball. You didn't just show up when it was game time. And that separates the boys from the men. And when we think about guys that we applaud, especially when we want to influence a younger generation, let's remember we're not just applauding these guys' greatness in terms of what they do on camera. It's when they showcase, obviously, what they must have been doing off camera to prepare themselves for that moment. Those are all the things that we should be preaching about, what you put into your body, how you take care of your body, the level of focus and dedication that you put forth every single day in order to make yourself ready. Remember, the NBA never canceled the season. It suspended the season, and there was always a possibility that you would return. If you are one of these guys that are going to be playing in the playoffs, what the hell were you doing during this time off when you knew that the season wasn't canceled? I love the fact that we're going to find that out.
Stephen A. Smith with us here on Golic and Wingo. So, Stephen A., you mentioned that part of it, and it's well served, and my mind immediately goes to someone like LeBron James, who we know takes such unbelievable care of his body, is the consummate professional in all of those ways, but is also an older player. And I'm curious, do you think with this shortened timeline that it maybe puts some of the advantage just because of youth and what the schedule is going to demand on these guys in favor of maybe a younger player who's also handling their business, but certainly might have a body that's more willing to withstand this?
Well, you can make that argument and nobody could refute it. What I would say to you is that if you had, and somewhat rhetorically, if you had to bet your money on a young player who was just healthy and vibrant, or LeBron James, where you putting your money? I know where I'm putting my money. It's going to be on LeBron James, because over the course of 17 years, we have never in 17 years see him ill-prepared physically to perform, ever, with the exception of the cramps that he suffered from in the finals against the San Antonio Spurs when he had to be carried to the bench. That's about it. Outside of that, we've never seen LeBron James ill-prepared physically. And so for me, I think that the younger players are in a world of trouble, because you had a better shot going into the playoffs wondering whether or not he would hit a wall because he had been playing most games this year and they were going straight into the playoffs. You trying to tell me that LeBron James, with the manner in which he takes care of his body and his level of dedication and focus and know-how, this dude gets a 3-month break before the postseason starts? I expect LeBron James to be arguably the healthiest dude in the league once NBA play resumes.
So with that, Stephen A., let's talk about the Lakers, who are obviously all in on this thing, and it would be a significant achievement for LeBron to win a title with a third different team. Where are you on the loss of Avery Bradley? How much that hurts that possibility? Because he was balling out before we suspended the season. He was a big part of that win over the Clippers. I think he had 29 points in that game. And does JR have to wear a shirt in the bubble?
Well, listen, first of all, yeah, he needs to wear a shirt in the bubble. Definitely so. but to get back, listen, I like the fact that J.R. Smith, it appears that he's going to be the guy. He's a Rich Paul client. We all know what our most memorable, what's the indelible memory that J.R. Smith left behind in terms of his postseason play. It's when he forgot that the score was tied and, you know, allowed the clock to run out and ended up going into overtime in game one, basically ruining a 51-point explosion by LeBron James. I love the fact that J.R. Smith is still tight with LeBron. I've seen him with LeBron since that time. LeBron loves the guy. And J.R. Smith is I don't know if you guys noticed that. He's a really, really good guy. He really is. And he's a guy that if you put him out there, I just love the idea of him getting an opportunity to make amends for that experience by being a teammate of LeBron James again. Avery Bradley was only averaging 8 points a game. Yeah, you're right. He did have a big game before the season was suspended. We get all of that. But people forget what a damn good perimeter defender J.R. Smith was as well. Avery Bradley obviously is a big-time defender, especially on-ball defender. But J.R. Smith can defend. I remember when J.R. Smith was in Cleveland and there was a discussion as to whether or not he was their best defender because that's how good he was as a defensive player, particularly on the perimeter. And we all know that he's very streaky and he has the ability to make big shots. So with that reality in mind, what I would say is I like the idea of J.R. Smith being a guy to replace Avery Bradley because I think he's every bit as capable of exploding for a game or two like Avery Bradley did. I definitely think he's capable of averaging 8 points a game, and I certainly believe he's capable of defending exceptionally well, even though Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Rajon Rondo, Alex Caruso, those guys are going to be ahead of him. It wouldn't surprise me at all if J.R. Smith found his way into that rotation, and I love the fact that he's going to have an opportunity to make amends as LeBron James' teammate on the Lakers. I think it's a good thing. I'm happy for him, and I wish him luck. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that this is going to be a good move for the Lakers.
Stephen A. Smith with us on Golic and Wingo. Let's shift over to NASCAR, something I'm sure you'll be talking about on First Take today. So just your thoughts on the fact now that we found out the story initially reported was wrong. The FBI goes in and says, finds out that the rope that tied like a noose in that garage had been there since last October. And then we know all the fallout since and we've heard a lot of talk since. What was your initial thought?
Well, my initial thought is let's not blame Bubba Wallace for anything. First of all, he didn't find the noose in his locker. You know, one of his crewmen found it. That's number one. He didn't make this up. He was told what was found. NASCAR immediately jumped on it. The FBI got involved. Department of Justice decided to investigate this situation. None of this is Bubba Wallace's doing. And for people out there who want to attack him, continue to be the idiots that you are. You know, the higher something climbs up a tree, the more it shows its behind, as they say. So that would just be dumb on their part to do that and to have that kind of mentality towards Bubba Wallace. What I would like to add, however, is that it is convenient for the folks running NASCAR today that happened. And here is why. Because obviously those individuals with NASCAR today are relatively progressive with their thinking. And as a result, they wanted to move into a different era and create a new imagery about themselves. And I'm not saying by any means that they put this together or they conspired or there's some kind of conspiracy theory. Please don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm implying here. What I am saying simply is this. It does benefit them because as a result, you saw the Bubba Wallace's car pushed to the front. You saw NASCAR come together as a community to stand behind him and stand with him and say, we will not tolerate one of our drivers being harassed, et cetera, et cetera. You see that the Confederate flags are no longer going to be allowed at their event. All of these things are things that assist in what NASCAR is trying to do in the present day and moving forward. And the fact that that incident happened enabled them to do so more forcefully and more obviously. And so as a result of that, I think ultimately this is something that benefits them. And they should just ride that wave and continue to move forward because regardless of the fact that it was there before, the bottom line is the history of NASCAR speaks for itself, how it's been non-inclusionary and prejudicial to some degree, at least in the eyes of the African-American community, certainly in the eyes of a Bubba Wallace, as well as many others. It's something that needed to be addressed. It's been addressed. It's going to continue to be addressed. And there's nothing that should stop or stymie that momentum, regardless of what they discovered, that indeed it wasn't a hate crime against Bubba Wallace. That ain't the point in the end. The point is the situation that has existed for decades with NASCAR needed to be changed, and it's in the process of being changed.
Well, in that same race, we saw someone fly over the track with a flag that with a star well, and bars flag. And said, yeah. Defund NASCAR, and there were flags outside it. So you're exactly right to that point. I mean, there's a much larger issue with the fan base that NASCAR is having to deal with. So, Stephen A., we appreciate right. the time this morning. Thank you, my friend.
Take care, guys.
Golic
makes me want to vomit and then punch you square in the face.
And Wingo.
Oh, he's saucy today.
We're delighted to be joined now by Cheryl Swoops, four-time WNBA champion and assistant coach at Texas Tech, where she played her college ball, and also, of course, being very active with her own support group that she founded, Back to Our Roots. We're delighted to talk to Cheryl for a variety of reasons. Cheryl, thanks for being with us. First of all, we'll get into everything else in a second, but the idea of playing in this bubble, we've talked to a lot of people about the difficulties that are going to be a part of it. As a player, how would you have reconciled what you're facing going forward?
Wow. First of all, thank you guys for having me. I'm excited to be here and just have an opportunity to talk a little bit. But I don't know. I mean, you know, it's tough. And I said this the other day when I talked to someone, I am never, ever going to tell someone what I think they should or shouldn't do, because everybody's situation is different, whether that's financially, mentally, physically. I know for myself personally, if I was still a player, it would be really, really hard for me to come back and live, not so much just live in a bubble for 4 months, but with everything going on in this country right now, from the coronavirus and obviously with all the hate and racism that's going on, it would be hard for me to come back personally and really focus and concentrate on doing my job as a basketball player when I have so many other thoughts going on in my head.
And certainly one of those thoughts has been everything going on in the world surrounding sports right now, obviously all the inequality that certainly black athletes, people of color have been facing through all this, and the way that athletes are trying to vocalize. How encouraged have you been seeing just how many athletes have now taken up this cause, whether it's, you know, LeBron James and the group of athletes he's put together with More Than a Vote or others, and just how seriously this group of athletes is taking this cause right now?
Well, you know, it as difficult as it is and as much as it hurts, it still gives me a little hope that something will change and something is happening. And not so much because of all the athletes, but because of just decent human beings that see the problem and want to be a part of fixing the problem. But when I look at athletes, right, especially on the WNBA side, WNBA players have, my opinion, been at the forefront of racial injustice for so long. That's just what we do, and we see the strength and the power in using our voices. And even in the NBA, when you look at LeBron and Carmelo and D-Wade and Chris Paul, a year or so ago when they took the stance at the ESPYs and had a discussion about it, it's always been there. I think somewhere in our minds, we just felt like, well, you know, it'll change without us really having to make a change. And now I think with the pandemic and everyone kind of being forced to sit down and stay at home, it's just really made us watch the news and things have really come to the forefront. And I think now people of all races are seeing it and are realizing something has to change. If something doesn't change, our world is headed in an awful place. And I'm just excited to be able to see blacks, whites, Hispanics, Asians, all different races that are protesting and marching in the streets and are being a voice for all of us.
Talking to Cheryl Swoops again, assistant coach at Texas Tech, started a nonprofit a bit ago. Back to Our Roots, BTOR22.com is the website for that. And obviously we just saw something else going on in the world with the protests and everything. And then it happened in sports in NASCAR. Now it turned out the story, and I know you were on Outside the Lines talking about this as well, with Bubba Wallace, was a noose found in his garage. The FBI came in and said, well, that particular rope had been there since last October, but we know everything that it set up off, and we saw the support from the other drivers. What was your general thought about that and then how the story has ended?
Well, you know, my general thought about it were a few things. First of all, with Bubba taking a stance and, you know, not being afraid to stand up and speak out and kind of be alone, you know, being the only African-American driver in NASCAR, that's huge for him to just step up and say enough is enough. And then for his fellow drivers to stand behind him and for NASCAR to come out and say, we hear you, we see you, we're going to do something about it, and to have all the Confederate flags taken down, I think is huge. And my initial thoughts were whoever did it, and I saw it somewhere, I said there's a special place in hell for people who do things like that, and I still believe that. And now when I see what the FBI investigation came back with, it hurts me, because a lot of people out there are saying, well, Bubba made it up, or NASCAR made it up for attention. Bubba doesn't need the attention. That part makes no sense to me. But here's what I'm still very confused with. I don't care if the noose was found 5 years ago. At the end of the day, it's still a noose. So if someone saw it and found it in there in October of 2019, why wasn't it brought to someone's attention then? Why didn't someone take it down then? Why didn't they talk about it then? Because to me, there's still a problem with that. What I liked about what Bubba said was, this isn't going to break me. It's not going to scare me. I don't know. It's not my place to say if the investigation was real or not. There's so many different layers to this whole situation to me, and I still see a problem with it.
Yeah, and that's why the support that Bubba got from so many of those drivers, I think, is going to be so significant going forward, because he says it will not break him, but you're going to need all the support you can going forward. As Cheryl Swoops is with us. And Cheryl, we've seen some WNBA players be about it. Maya Moore basically ended her career for the foreseeable future to fight for people who she believes are wrongly accused. Now we see Renee Montgomery doing the same. What do you make of players who are in their prime and have the ability to really cash in on their athletic prowess, basically saying, hey, that's great and all, but I feel like there's a bigger issue for me right now?
Listen, I'm so glad you brought Maya Moore up, because I said this the other day. I do not think she's getting enough recognition for what she is doing. Maya, one of the best players that's ever played the game, and as you said, in her prime, walked away from the game 2 years ago, didn't tell anyone about it, didn't get permission, and just said, listen, there's something bigger going on and something more important, something bigger than basketball, and just said, I am going to continue, or at least start, my fight for social justice and criminal justice reform. So kudos to her. I think what Maya is doing is huge. And absolutely, she deserves more recognition for it. But I know she didn't do it for recognition. And then, as you said, Renee Montgomery the other day just decided that she was going to do the same thing. And I think right now where we are as athletes, I think we're finally starting to realize the power that we hold. And, you know, in the WNBA and NBA, I would say 80% of the athletes are African-American. And I think at some point, if we don't use our platform and start speaking up and using our voices for change, no one is going to listen to us. And I think finally right now, people are real athletes, especially are realizing, look, this is so much bigger than me. It's so much bigger than the game. It's so much bigger than my family. This is about our race, And this has been going on forever and ever and ever. And I think we always have just sat back and said, let someone else handle it. Let someone else fix it. Someone else will take care of it. And I think everyone is just is tired. And so for Renee to take that stance, and I know Tiffany Hayes yesterday said she's not going to be playing this season either, you know, and I'm not judging any player whether they choose to play or choose not to play, but for the players that are saying, I'm not going to play, there's something bigger out there for me and something more important that I want to focus on and work on, I think it's huge for all of them to do that.
Again, the nonprofit that Cheryl is a part of founding, Back to Our Roots. You can check it out, btor22.com, to help encourage youth to accept their differences, learn about their culture, and show them how the sports world can connect people from all over the world. Cheryl, we appreciate certainly the cause that you are championing, your voice in all of this, and your time with us today. Thank you.
Thank you guys so much for having me. Stay safe.
Thanks, Cheryl.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that GEICO always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.